Hello, and welcome to the second half of our discussion, What are the current legislative efforts to address health disparities between racial and ethnic groups? I'm Kara James, Senior Policy Analyst at the Foundation, and your moderator for this part of the conversation. You've just heard Dr. Satcher discuss the progress we've made in reaching the goals set forth in Healthy People 2010. We now turn our attention to the role of legislation in addressing racial and ethnic health disparities and some of the bills introduced in the 110th Congress that focus on this issue. To help people become familiar with some of them, we've put together a compendium that highlights over a dozen bills. It is available on our website. With me in the studio today are Dr. Garth Graham, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Minority Health in the Office of Minority Health at the Department of Health and Human Services, Dr. Dora Hughes, Health and Education Policy Advisor for Senator Barack Obama, and Mr. Sean McCluskey, Legislative Director for Representative Xavier Becerra. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
If you have questions for our panelists, please send them to today's topics at kaisernetwork.org. Dr. Hughes, I'd like to start with you by asking you a question that we received from a viewer. What is the role that you see of legislation in reducing racial and ethnic health disparities?
I think that Dr. Satcher nicely covered some of that, the importance of legislation. Certainly, the federal government is not will ultimately not be successful acting by itself in terms of addressing health disparities. It will be a true partnership between the federal government, state and local governments, as well as the provider community, both whether it be the physicians and nurses, as well as public health practitioners. And it's also a fairly broad effort looking across education, economics, the environment, agriculture. But in terms of the legislation that's before the Senate right now, we have largely focused on the role of the federal health agencies in terms of setting standards and oversight, monitoring for better data collection, particularly racial and ethnic data collection, at helping providers understand and implement class as an example, encouraging the large health plans and hospitals, particularly the public hospitals and community health centers, to engage in quality improvement initiatives. We have also codified the REACH initiative that Dr. Satcher also mentioned earlier. I think that overall the bills have touched on a number of priority areas, in addition to, of course, expanding coverage, which Sean will cover more, I have no doubt.
Okay, thank you. And Garth, Dora also mentioned the role of the federal agencies and health agencies specifically in some of the CLASS Act. And Dr. Satcher mentioned the Office of Minority Health. And so could you tell us a little bit about the Office of Minority Health and what your role is in getting some of the legislation?
Sure. I think Dr. Satcher articulated well. The Federal Office of Minority Health really serves as that federal focal point within the Department of Health and Human Services to coordinate a number of policies and programs dealing with health disparities. We work with folks within the department. We work with the Office of the National Coordinator and issues related to HIT and health disparities. We work with HRSA. We work with CDC. We work with NIH and National Center for Minority Health and Health Disparities, which Dr. Satcher's pointing out is a very, very, very important agency working on this issue around health disparities. We also work with folks on the outside. We work, as Dr. Satcher again articulated, we work with the State Offices of Minority Health and the National Association of the State Offices of Minority Health, led by Cheryl Boyce, to help to further and expand the activities that are occurring on the state level. State offices of minority health are very, very, very important, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later on. But also we work on particular initiatives that folks can view. If you go to our website at www.omhrc.gov, you'll see the variety of things that we're working on. Two things in particular I want to talk about. We are working at this point across the government on something called the Federal Collaborative on Health Disparities Research, which is particularly important, coordinating things across varied agencies around health disparities. We also work quite strongly on the CLASS standards. The CLASS standards that were issued by the Office of Minority Health back in 2000, really 14 standards targeted toward hospital health systems, healthcare professionals, and things people can do to improve culturally and linguistically appropriate care. It's a very important thing that we have been talking about for some time now. We also have cultural competency training modules that augment the CLASS standards and help to really provide that training avenue and that training vehicle. But the CLASS standards are very, very, very important to the Office of Minority Health.
And can you just briefly mention what a couple of those class standards are?
Right. So those standards really, really touch on a number of things. They touch on things such as providing interpreter services and providing cultural and linguistic appropriate care, making sure that physicians are trained in issues of our cultural competency. I was telling you a little bit earlier that if you go to our website, you'll see another website, which is www.thinkculturalhealth.org. And really what we're trying to do is to have folks think cultural competency in anything that they do in terms of how you interact with a particular patient, a particular individual, in terms of how the healthcare system is designed overall. So we have cultural competency training modules directed towards physicians. We have them directed towards nurses. And we're in the process now of developing cultural competency training for first responders as well.
Mm-hmm. And have any of those been mandated to be used across the country? Or?
Well, you know, what we've seen occurring with the class standards is very important. We've seen where a number of healthcare organizations, such as JACO, and a number of state-based organizations have really gravitated towards the class standards and have been working with us and working with others in terms of implementation of those standards, as well as, like I said, in terms of mentioning some of the training activities that we have ongoing as well. So working on very important issues that Dr. Satcher is pointing out, and the Institute of Medicine and a number of organizations have articulated how important cultural competency is in terms of strengthening our nation.
Mm-hmm. And so, Sean, I wanted to follow up a little bit with that and also to talk a little bit about the role of legislation and kind of implementation and making sure that we are doing at least what you guys have set forth in some of these bills. And so could you talk a little bit about the role of legislation and kind of following up on that?
Mm-hmm. Congress is one of its main roles is oversight over the executive branch. And as we pass legislation, it ultimately is the executive branch that has to enforce it. And so what we have to do in Congress is we have to ensure that things are being implemented as Congress intended. And part of that is getting data and getting information to see and also funding the agencies enough so that they can do the job that they've been asked to do. And with the cultural and linguistic items that we have, In a recent Medicare bill and the SCHIP, which is the Children's Health Insurance Program, that passed out of the House of Representatives in early August, we asked for a study from the Health and Human Services IG, Inspector General, to look at to see if these things were actually being implemented among Medicare providers, something that Congressman Javier Becerra had been very interested in doing. And what we believe is that's the kind of role that we need to do to find enforcement. We first have to understand what's happening. And then as Congress goes forth, you can use carrots or you can use sticks. Some of it's giving money so that things are implemented properly. And then sometimes it sticks. And then for providers, especially in the Medicare or Medicaid programs, we can find ways to reward positive behavior and punish bad behavior. And that's what we're doing. And so first we need to find out the information, and that's what we try to do.
Okay. So let's take a step back a little bit and talk about some of the broader political environment in both the House and the mm-hmm. Senate that has led to more bills kind of being introduced at this halfway point than we saw in the entire 109th Congress. So could you talk a little bit about what's going on the House side in terms mm-hmm. of movement?
There's a lot of legislation that's often introduced, and I, as a person who's taught a few political science classes in my time, I always try to remind people that it's between 1-2% of all legislation that's ever passed that's been introduced. And there's been some very large bills introduced, some comprehensive ones in Congress, in the House, and in the Senate. And what I often like to point out is that you introduce big ideas, and hopefully you can push them forward. But if you can't, what we often do is try to take pieces of those legislation and put them on different other pieces of legislation that must do, such as reauthorizing mental health programs, fixing Medicare programs, passing children's health insurance. These are programs that Congress has to come back to every few years and legally allow them to continue. And so what the best thing to do is the House is a little bit different than the Senate. When the majority is in power, they pretty much control all the rules. And what we've been trying to do is find vehicles. And what we did with the Children's Health Insurance and Medicare Improvement Act is that we decided to put some of our provisions on that. One of them was collecting in the Medicare program data on health disparities and also doing studies, and also we actually, Mr. Becerra pushed a program to have language services in a demonstration project for Medicare to see if they actually, if we can improve the health of folks, because so they can understand what types of medicines they're taking and what instructions they're getting from the doctor. So these are the types of things. So we've passed some legislation, although limited, but that it's a little easier for us to do it because the majority has a lot more power.
Okay. And so, Dora, could you talk a little bit about how things differ in the House, in the Senate side, and sort of what's going on there?
Well, certainly the Senate is a very different animal than the House side. And in particular, at this point in time, because the Democrats, although they have the majority, we have a one-vote majority. And so it ties our hands in terms of being as progressive as many members would like. But just to take a step all the way back, I think it's helpful to remember the process for how a bill passes in the first place. And granted, I'll be speaking more from the Senate perspective because, again, it's the rules and procedures are a bit different. But the two main committees in the Senate through which health bills pass, one is the Finance Committee and the other is the Health Committee, which stands for the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee. Looking at the pure politics, Senator Edward Kennedy is the chair of the Health Committee, and as many of us know, he's been a longstanding champion of minority health issues. Our ranking member is Senator Enzi, and although he is very sympathetic to the concerns, he represents the state of Wyoming, which has a relatively small population of minorities at best, and so his priorities appropriately reflect his state interest. Even when once a bill is introduced, it's at the discretion of the chair to take up a bill for consideration. And we are in that process right now for a number of minority health bills, in particular the Minority Health Improvement and Health Disparities Act, or Senate Bill 1567. The dynamics of the committee is that we work very hard to negotiate a compromise bill that we hope that can get marked up or passed out of committee. If members on committee oppose the bill, they can simply vote against it, or they can employ a number of blocking mechanisms to prevent the bill from ever getting a vote. And so that's why it's in our interest to try to do as well as we could to establish some type of agreement so the bill can move out of committee. Even once it hits the floor, and for the Help Committee bills, the majority of those bills pass by unanimous consent. What that means is that if even one senator opposes the bill, they can put a hold on the bill, and the bill will never pass through the Senate. Some people have said passing a bill in the center of the House is you should use the analogy of a marathon. It can take many years and many attempts. There's numerous hurdles and barriers, but at the end, you can be successful, and we hope to be successful on moving some type of minority health bill in the spring of 2008 at the latest, and that's where we are in the process right now.
Okay. I do want to come back to that notion of many bills taking many attempts, because that is something I think we've seen with some of the legislation that's before both the House and the Senate. But Garth, I wanted to talk to you a little bit and get your perspective on how do you sort of influence in your office, influence or not influence this process and some of the legislation that's coming forth?
Sure. So at the Department of Health and Human Services, our Office of the Assistant Secretary of Legislation is the official conduit between the department and the Hill in general, whether that be on the House side or the Senate side. So they really look at the bills and help communicate some of the department's either concerns or agreements or things along those lines. There are specific members on the Hill who are particularly interested and who are particularly strong on minority health and health disparities issues. There are folks such as Senator Thad Cochran from Mississippi, who has done a number of activities to help support and promote issues around health disparities, racial and ethnic and geographic health disparities. Senator Kennedy, as was outlined earlier. So there are a lot of folks who continue to promote and voice strongly issues around health disparities. So we kind of have our channels where we work officially, but then we also want to make sure that we work with particular members who are concerned about health disparities within their communities so that we can adequately address those.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about some of the specifics of these bills that have come forth that, you've mentioned a couple. And so, Sean, I wanted to start with you on some of the legislation that actually has made it through that both, your member has been working on. Mm-hmm. So could you tell us a little bit about some of those?
Legislation has passed. The most important is probably the Children's Health Program and Medicare. And I would say that it is the first step in addressing these issues, and there's much more to be done. And in that legislation, We do a language demonstration in Medicare. We look at the Medicare program, collect more data to get a better understanding of health disparities and what needs to be done. And we do several studies in doing the cultural and linguistic to see if they're being implemented properly. And we also ask the IOM to start looking at language barriers to see what can be done. And those are small steps but important steps in the process. And then there are broader pieces of legislation that deal with, you know, workforce, the environment that we work in, and those pieces of legislation are taking comprehensive approaches to handling, and maybe pieces of those will be put on other pieces of legislation to actually have a chance to go through. And so as we go forward, that's kind of what we're going to be looking for.
So. Yeah. And so, Dora, could you talk to us a little bit about kind of particularly sort of the Minority Health Improvement and Health Disparity Elimination Act? And also, you'd also mention some of the others that you guys have before you. And so let's talk about some of those key provisions if we were thinking about maybe a comprehensive bill might not work, but maybe we take a piece of this. What do you think are some of those most important components of that bill?
Well, just to piggyback what Sean just said, we certainly acknowledge that language access is a extremely important issue, but that on the Senate side has been unfortunately tied up with the fights over immigration, and so given the controversy and reminding again our one vote majority inability to pass most bills that we're not able to find common ground, that's an area that I expect that we will not be able to substantially address in the upcoming months. But in the areas that we have that common ground, we could point to we recently reauthorized the Community Health Center program, and that was a very bipartisan effort on both sides of the aisle. Everyone understands the critical role of access that's provided by the Community Health Centers. And so those are the type of the common ground issues, common sense solutions that that we are focusing around right now. And in terms of the Minority Health Improvement and Health Disparity Act, he mentioned workforce is one issue. Title VII training programs are up for reauthorization in any case. And the workforce diversity programs are one area of focus. Quality improvement has been a heavy area of interest for both the Finance and the Health Committee. We do understand the important role that hospitals, health plans, providers the important role that they have in terms of improving quality, particularly given with the pay for performance and other larger quality measurement reporting systems. We hope to do more of that. It's largely supported by both the Democrats and the Republicans. On the environmental health, the politics are a little bit shaky if you start talking about environmental justice as an example, but on one area that people do embrace is if you couch it in terms of childhood obesity prevention, then we start to understand the important role of having a more physical education class in school, better nutrition standards, and to make sure the actual communities, whether that be walking trails or biking paths or availability of grocery stores and other healthy foods, that's another area that we hope that we expect to find common ground and can make some meaningful steps forward in the upcoming months, early next year. So that's just a touch on a number. There's a whole number of other areas that I hope that we find some agreement. Mm-hmm. But that was just it. And then just to speak about how we interact with the Office of Minority Health, certainly the Office of Minority Health specifically and General Administration have been very helpful in terms of providing technical assistance, a greater clarification about the current activities of the administration and how we could dovetail with their efforts to help promote and not inadvertently hamper. And so it's been certainly a fruitful relationship and one that will be very important, again, as we try to move the Minority Health Bill and other bills forward in the upcoming Congress.
Okay. Sean, I wanted to go back a little bit and talk about how kind of the House and the Senate work together, that we've seen some bills have been introduced only on one side of the Capitol Hill rather than both sides, and some bills have a Senate partner and a House partner. So could you talk a little bit about how that comes about and how that works together?
Generally, when you're the most important thing is to develop relationships with folks on both sides of the aisle and also across both houses in Congress. And what you generally do is you come up with an idea or maybe your boss is showing an interest in an area, and you reach out to different offices. And what happens is sometimes you're looking for legislation that you're looking for a partner on the Senate side. That's often better to introduce something that you agreed upon that folks can move forward. Occasionally, such as the Healthcare Accountability Act that we have, which doesn't have a partner, that piece of legislation was developed by what we call the Tri-Caucus in the House of Representatives, and in that legislation, we have the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, the Congressional Black Caucus, and the Asian Pacific Caucus, and we usually use those folks to build the legislation. And what we try to do there was build like a model legislation that we can do, so we can spur ideas. Mm-hmm. So it's important for us to move stuff to get a Senate partner, but it's often sometimes you'll see legislation introduced to kind of spur new ideas, and maybe it can transpire into something else. And that's what we try to do sometimes, and sometimes you can't find a partner on the other side, but maybe pieces of that legislation will be adopted because people think there's a good idea. And when I'm looking to develop a bill with other folks, you know, you often look at other legislation. You go, hey, that's a really good piece of legislation. Can we agree on that? And so that's the kind of the way you develop legislation. And it's important to have it on paper and out there because it does spur ideas, and it may bring consensus as people start to think through the legislation. And so that's kind of how we work with the Senate. And I believe that we also often get technical assistance from the administration just to make sure we're not writing something that can't be done. So,
and you mentioned the tri-caucuses, and I know that Representative Solis has been very active in a lot of the health bills that have come forth on the House side, and also Representative Christensen has been very active. And so how do they kind of work together in kind of picking, if there will, sort of an area? I know that diabetes is a big issue for your member. Mm-hmm. So how does that kind of happen?
Well, what we do is Mr. Becerra is actually part of the Asian Pacific Caucus and also part of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. And so what we do is each caucus within itself tries to come up with bills that they think that all their members can agree upon. They do a vote, and there's a certain number that have to agree to it for us to endorse it. Congresswoman Solis is the head of the health group in the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, and so she often takes the lead on a lot of these types of issues, and when it comes to Medicare or diabetes, my boss has kind of decided to take the lead on a lot of this because he is the vice chair of the Diabetes Caucus, and so what we do is we come together as a group and we try and figure out something that we can all agree upon, and then they have to get through the particular caucuses, and the tri-caucuses try to come together as a unit, because we feel like it gives a little bit of weight that this is something that is very important to these communities, these minority communities, and enough of our members are supportive of it that we want to move it forward. I think it often gives a stamp of approval and a sense that, these are the groups that are most affected because their districts have a disproportionate amount of minorities comparatively to other districts, and therefore I think that it carries a little bit of weight and people do look at us and take us seriously. And I think that's important. And these are just these little caucuses in there. And often on diabetes issues, which is the second largest caucus in the House of Representatives, that caucus is people do look to us on diabetes issues. And I'm talking about a piece of legislation, a special diabetes program, which funds Native American, is up for reauthorization. And we're trying to expand that program to get $300 million from $150 million. And so we come behind those kinds of issues, and they're very important. So I think that's what's important. Unfortunately, the Senate doesn't have as many minorities represented, and we probably could do a little bit more of that, and that'd probably be helpful. But like Senator Obama and Senator Menendez and Salazar and Martinez, they all work with us to try and find some common ground. So,
So Garth, you'd mentioned the class standards and sort of measurement or use of them around the country. And Dory, you talked about some of the provisions that are in the Minority Health Improvement and Health Disparity Elimination Act, and also a little bit about the health equity and accountability. And one of the things I want to kind of get to and talk about a little bit is the provisions around data collection and measurement of disparities. And we're seeing that budgets to, CDC and some of the National Center for Health Disparities that would do the large data collection of these issues are being cut. So how is this going to affect our ability to measure disparities, and are there any efforts to kind of put a little bit more money back in those programs?
The the Senate across the board has largely supported increasing the budgets to the federal health agencies. Even the administration's budgets has proposed a fairly draconian cuts, and all across the budgets, the Senate on a bipartisan basis has every year to date passed amendment to actually increase the amount of dollars to not adopt the administration's cuts, propose a higher level of funding for the federal health agencies. And Senators Harkin and Specter have generally championed that amendment, and has easily passed. But given the fiscal realities, or in fact that we are facing cuts in funding that is available for discretionary programs across the agencies, and it will play a role in dampening the forward momentum we've seen in racial ethnic data collection. But part of how we've tried to not sidestep it, to work in parallel tracks. So although we can't do as much on the discretionary side, we still, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services still has a major role in being able to having the ability to collect racial and ethnic data collection through the federal health programs that are operated or supported by particularly Medicare and Medicaid. And so in both the Minority Health Improvement Bill as well as the Health Care Equality Accountability Act, both have asked that there be greater racial and ethnic data collection across all federal health programs. And in fact, we've seen that CMS has started to do a little bit more in that respect. And so we are looking for every opportunity to, even if we can't do it through the CDC or ARC or others, what are the other avenues that we should explore? And we've tried to be very aggressive in doing so. And I'm going to say, just in terms of the partnership bill, that actually Senator Akaka on the Senate side did introduce the Health Care Equality and Accountability Act, and it was co-sponsored by a number of Democrats. Our bipartisan bill, the Minority Health Bill, was introduced by Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. on the House side, and it is has 28 Democrats, 28 Republicans. And so to the extent that we can, we do introduce companion versions, and we do try to move forward just to make on both sides to come to agreement early in the process about what both the Senate and the House could feasibly pass, and that's our expectation moving forward with the minority health bills as well.
Okay. That statement of moving forward is a great transition, and so one of the questions that we have that came in is what can people do to help move these things forward? We have a lot of people in our audience that are viewing from across the country. We have federal employees. We have people in academic settings. What can they do to help move this process along?
Certainly, I think for minority health issues, even if you look at the backgrounds of the senators on the health committee, if you're an advocate in that state, or if you're an academic or researcher in that state, your voice is so tremendously important that if you could contact your senator or your representative and share that this is a priority for the state, these are the reasons why, whether it be for financial reasons, we can achieve greater savings if we improve quality of care, if it's for the moral imperative of the issue, if it's because this school, this community will be affected, that is tremendously important and carries much more weight than I think a lot of folks in communities readily appreciate. So I would like to always make a pitch to contact your senator office, contact your representative's office on a persistent basis to get your voice up there that this is something that must be done.
And I would just say that, you have to, being politically active is very important. But it's ultimately organizations like Kaiser and Robert Wood Johnson who, when we're on Capitol Hill and we're looking for ideas for legislation, we look to you guys because you're the ones who have all the information. You're educating everybody. And it's the advocates in the field who are dealing day-to-day, and the medical professionals who are dealing day-to-day with patients. And when we often meet in our offices with constituents and advocacy groups and research organizations. And those meetings are so valuable to us because they really stimulate ideas. And through those interactions and continued discussions, that's what makes it's a marketplace of ideas, and it also gives us an idea of what the problems are out there, and it gives us and that's more important than anything else in the world, because without that rigorous process and we can't come up with the solutions. And so it's very important for folks to do it. And it's very important just to be very active and get to understand how a bill becomes a law and all the it's kind of an ugly process sometimes, but it's important for folks to understand that just because it didn't happen this year, it doesn't mean it can't happen next year. I mean, bigger bills, bigger programs like Social Security and Medicare didn't come around yesterday. It took many years to get there. So everybody just remembers when it was done. They'll remember all the pieces of paper that were written on and rewritten on in the process to get there. So it's very important for folks to keep it up and be persistent.
Okay. And very quickly, 2008 is a big year. What do you see as the prospects for getting any legislation passed in kind of like 30 seconds or less?
It's going to be a difficult year. As often the second year of a Congress is, folks are focusing on elections. But I'm hopeful. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are little things we can do here and there that we both parties agree on in both chambers of the Congress. And I think that, you know, we could do studies and we can start to get more data and more money towards these things. We can also make sure that the programs like Medicare and Medicaid are focusing. These can be the leader programs in helping health disparities. And if we continue to improve those programs and try and find some little things we can do, we can probably do a lot more to move forward some of this debate and inform it more by having better data.
And I would just add, even though certainly the process will grind to a halt by June, July of next year as we gear up for the presidential elections, mm-hmm. I still think it's important that on the state and local level we remain very active to even in terms of ideas for the bills, because we still will need the intellectual capital so we can be ready to move very quickly in 2009. And so, on the local state level, we still encourage you to continue to do as much as you can so that we'll be in a better state to really be able to accelerate our efforts in 2009.
Do you have any last thoughts here?
Well, you know, we definitely look to the Congress. We look to the folks on the Hill who care deeply about this matter. We also look to the community to continue their support. I mean, as Dr. Hughes pointed out, there are folks in the community who have put in blood, sweat, and tears into issues around reducing and eliminating health disparities. We're going to continue to work with those folks. Issues around data collection is important for us at Office of Minority Health. It's important for us at HHS. The HHS Data Council has been looking into this issue, especially as it pertains to Native American Pacific Islander communities. So we have to keep up with the energy. We have to keep up with the passion. And more importantly, we need more progress.
Okay. So I would like to thank our panelists, Dr. Garth Graham, Dr. Dora Hughes, and Mr. Sean McCluskey, for being here today to discuss this important topic. I would also like to thank you for your questions. You can find a copy of the Compendium of Disparities Legislation, as well as other resources related to our conversation, at our website at www.kff.org. We look forward to continuing our series in the new year. Thank you, and have a good day.